We return with Mark Ostwald, who's a strategist at ADM Investor Services, who's promised not to talk about Greece for about 10 seconds.
At least.
So, well, you can start now.
Yes, sadly, Greece continues to grip financial markets, though in a strange way, there's a sort of... it's almost like rabbits in front of the headlights at the moment, because the actual movements, until you actually get something dramatic happening, someone walking out, as we saw yesterday with the equity markets, is what do we do now? And part of the problem is actually where we are in terms of the calendar. It's 3 days before the end of the half year, quarter end, month end. There's really quite a lot to do, because for people sort of rejigging, particularly multi-asset portfolios, because we've had very sharp movements in bond yields, very sharp steepening of yield curves, both in the US and in the Eurozone, and to some extent even in Japan, certainly here in the UK. There's been quite sharp volatility, though it's more a case of a sideways turn in equities. and we're still not really quite sure what we're going to do about the whole oil complex. But without having the Greek situation resolved, jumping the gun is actually quite complex. So we end up with this sort of sense of stasis.
And which, I mean, just from a layperson's point of view, which markets are you know, have the most to lose from this Greece, you know, the Greece en passe? Is it the bonds, as we've already seen, or is there something else which could be a casualty of this?
Well, the problematic is, as we all know, leaving Greece aside, the big bubble that we have at the moment is the one inspired by central banks in bonds and credit.
Doesn't that dwarf Greece?
In the long run, absolutely. It's also the reason why markets are actually struggling to move, because there is a lot of money.
So Greece is almost a casualty of that rather than being...
Yes, it's certainly more a casual relationship than a causal relationship. So we're in this situation where it doesn't look like there's going to be any resolution, certainly none which is meaningful. All financial markets really want is for this to be kicked into the long grass for 6-9 months before it rears its ugly
head. Somebody should write a check for a certain amount of money and pretend...
Which isn't going to happen. In essence, really, we've got to this point where it becomes patently obvious that the Eurogroup actually want to enforce regime change, and the Greek government wants a free lunch.
Mark, you mentioned about bonds. I'm looking at probably the bonds that the ECB bought in, I don't know, four or five years ago. You know, they must have some very, very heavy book profits on that, okay? Is that one of the reasons that maybe the ECB is willing to sort of overlend or provide the day-to-day running, $1 billion here, $2 billion there, knowing that if worst case scenario happened, you know, they could sell the Greek bonds and still make a profit? Or is that just a silly
Well,
angle?
Not really. I mean, I think they are above all more than aware of the fact that their finger was seen on the gun of the rescues in Ireland and Cyprus.
Yes.
And this time around, there is going to be no ECB gun. Because this has gone on, been spun out so long, it's obvious that in this particular very highly sensitive political situation, the ECB absolutely wants to withdraw and just oil the wheels. Now, what happens, obviously, if we get to a default situation? And the default situation is part of the problem, because we've got ratings agencies. Moody's this morning came out with a golden piece. They said, well, a default to the IMF is not really a default because it's a loan. But then they went on to add, which is something new, because S&P previously, when they'd ruled on this, had suggested that a default would occur if the payment, or rather redemption, of the bonds that the ECB holds is not made. Moody said, well, that might not be a default. So here we are back again with ratings agencies and probably also with the people who rule on ISDA, ruling on what's the default is. We don't even know what a default is anymore. What we do know...
Because there hasn't been one like this before, so we don't actually know what it is.
Was it Zambia or Zimbabwe 20 years ago or the 80s or something?
Uruguay, yeah. Even more recently. Yeah. I think part of the problem is this is a very politicized situation, and actually everyone knows that without a big write down of Greek debt, whatever solution is come up with is not going to be a solution. And that's essentially the nub of the problem, because everyone within the Euro group knows that if they make concessions in terms of writing down debt for Greece, then there's a very orderly queue going to be formed by the likes of Portugal, Italy, Spain, to say, thanks very much, we'll have some of that too. Mm.
But I mean, so therefore, it's almost that there has to be a default of some kind, so that the people who played it by the book before, the Portuguese, the Irish, etc., won't be complaining. There has to be agony seen to be taken by the Greeks,
yes,
in order to...
Yes, but there will also be fallout, because in that particular situation, people will then be looking at the ECB's balance sheet. They'll be also looking at the EFSF's balance sheet, because that great rescue thing, all its assets are Greek assets, basically. I mean, bar a few little bits here and there. And so you're looking at whether the ECB might need a capital injection. You're looking at whether the EFSF might need a capital injection. And you're also crystallizing losses, because one thing no one's actually bothered explaining to a lot of the lenders or the taxpayers of the lenders' country, you actually haven't lent any money yet. You only actually get into trouble when a country defaults on all of this, and then suddenly you will be asked to come up with some real cash rather than some guarantees.
Does that mean that we in the UK will also be having to pay out a little bit?
One would have thought so, because the UK is certainly part of the ESM and EFSF mechanisms.
All right, so the UK, when it runs into trouble itself, doesn't get any money from anybody else, but when other people run into trouble, it pays out.
Yes, but as the OECD pointed out nicely to us all yesterday, we also have now, with our low interest rate environment, roughly we're looking at a deficit in our pension schemes here in the UK of about £1 trillion. Mm. But I mean, what's £1 trillion?
Well, luckily,
friends?
I don't have a pension, so it's not a problem to me. We'll just briefly go on to less horrible aspects of the world's economy. The US data, I think you wanted to touch upon that. Obviously, we've got the non-farms next week. Is there anything that's going to change, you think, from that?
No, not really. I think the important thing to keep in perspective for everybody in terms of the US is, yes, the manufacturing data is not impressive, but we know that. That's all the fallout from the energy sector. The energy sector and its supply, all the things that are, you know, so transport and equipment, does make a huge does have a huge impact on things. But otherwise, consumer spending is pretty robust. State finances have improved in the US for the first time in over 20 years.
Look at the state of California.
Miracle. Yep. So things are actually looking a lot better in the US. And there's really, you know, with the trick that the Fed's played, drawn out of the old Volcker playbook, where they've actually gone and said, right, we're going to make forecasts which are below the market consensus, so that when we come to August time, September time, we can revise those up.
Don't mean to
and at that point,
but it goes back to Mr. Greenspan, probably 25 years ago with the Humphrey Hawkins, when he finishes one of his conversations and one of the senators asks him a question. And Mr. Greenspan, just what you just said, if you understood what I just said, you weren't listening.
Indeed, absolutely. So
I can't follow that one, right?
So we're left in a situation where basically, barring a calamitous disaster within the financial system, which is always around the corner, there is no reason why we shouldn't get that rate hike at the end of the third quarter in the US, and probably have another one by the end of the year. There's certainly all the pointers are there. Inflation picking up. The only thing which might stop it, and this is really where the Iran negotiations are very important nowadays, is if the oil price was to set back very, very sharply. That would have very important implications, because that would bring the inflation rate down quite sharply. And when we look at the PCE deflator, which is far more sensitive to, ironically, the core one, which is far more sensitive to energy price movements, yeah, it's looking at like 1.2% today. So the people on the FOMC are a little bit worried that inflation's not going to get back to target. We'll be looking at that and saying, particularly if oil prices come back, this should basically stop us from raising rates too early, and we should be more behind the curve. But assuming oil prices stay at the current level or pick up slightly, then base effects will kick in and we will be heading back towards their target, and then there's really nothing to stop the Fed at all. Just the, you know, it's a very gradual process.
They've been listening to me, Zach. They just missed it by a couple of months.
I still think they're too chicken to hurt the stock market. It's a bit of a binary. The first rate hike is going to hurt the stock market quite a lot, I think, and that's something which I think is the main.
Depends how much. It hurts it in terms of people rolling over geared positions at the very front of the curve. But if the sense is that people can roll over their financing positions for those highly leveraged stock plays, where all the carry plays are, then it might just be a short, sharp shock. It becomes really then a question of what do people think the trajectory is, and this is where the communications can be.
In reference to what Zach said, very, very quickly, we've seen a massive withdrawal out of the bond funds. I'm assuming that probably that cash, and we're talking billions, could still be on the sidelines. So with what Zach said, if that money is waiting, if they're already out of the bond funds and they're waiting for the Fed to make a move, and let's just say, I don't care, the Dow sells off 500 or 600 points, there should be enough cash in there to make up that 500 or 600 point drop, either neutralizing that or improving on it. I've been in the market so long, I've never seen bond markets and stock markets both go up in tandem. They're not supposed to do that.
They're not supposed to do that, but on the other hand, cash as an investable option, i.e. deposits, are not an investable option. So the money which is on the sidelines at the moment, A, can't stay there very long because it's not generating any return. And if you are an investor with a fund, you're looking at it and saying, oh, so you put the money on deposit and you're charging me fees for you to put money on deposit. What are you going to do? You're going to turn around to the fund manager and say...
We've got to finish it there, but Mark Ostwald, strategist, ADM Investor Service, thanks for coming in today and almost managing to avoid the Greek
Yay!
three quarters of the interview. But we'll be back after the break.